We're learning Aleph Shor, and we're on the topic of Emunah. And we go right to the end of the last chapter. Bolet hadavar b'sheirat chacham ha'omdot al perek mizman lezman. The topic of Emunah is something which is inbuilt, natural, that people have faith. And it's something which, once you have it, it's across the board. If you have a basic sense of trust in people, then that basic sense of trust will be broadly, unless someone ruined it. You know, there could be a particular organization or a particular person who's betrayed you, and you could betray your trust. But generally, it doesn't work that a person can have great trust in area A and no trust in area B. In general, it's a person who has somewhat of an even level of trust across the board. And when this topic comes up in an interesting manner, and I'm going to add, and especially it comes up around political times, where people start saying political views, this rabbi, that rabbi, and then it gets all complex of who you trust and who you don't trust and who has ulterior motives. And there are certain times when there are late senei hador, when there are people who act in an inappropriate way, and they ask a rabbi a question in the following way. Not in these words exactly, but they say, "Rabbi, either tell me this is allowed, or I'm not going to listen to you." And that's basically what they ask it. Right? And what does it mean they won't listen to them? It means that either on their personal level, they'll just stop asking questions in a very subtle way. Or it could be on a broad level, they'll go out and Chas v'Shalom even like ridicule this rabbi so strict. I remember clearly, it was Dafka this time of year, that I went to a certain place and a rabbi gave a shiur on halachas of Pesach, getting ready for Pesach, and he was strict about a certain topic. And the people of the shul, like I was sitting with the people of the shul, and they were saying after the shiur, even during the shiur, I think after the shiur, they were saying, this rabbi doesn't understand us, he's making up chumras. They, in other words, in order to justify that they didn't want to do what he was saying, they were attacking the personality of the rabbi. We don't have to trust him, he's too strict, he doesn't understand where we're coming from. And by making it more of kind of a public statement, then it made, you know, more justified for the individual not to have to keep the... Which is a more rude expression of the same idea. Of either you tell me a kula, which I want, or if you don't tell me a kula, then I'm not going to listen to you. Which is not having a basic sense of trust. Some people are even scared to ask questions, because they're worried what the answer is going to be. I'd rather not ask. I remember clearly when I was in high school, and I was davening in a certain place, and there was someone who'd come back from yeshiva, who'd davening in my shul, and I don't remember what it was that I was doing that he thought was wrong, but he said to me, you should ask the rabbi that question. So I said, I don't want to ask. So he said to me, look, the fact that you didn't ask, you don't know, doesn't mean it's not the halacha. It just means that you're breaking the halacha. But if you realize there's a question on something, you have to ask and you have to follow whatever the halacha is. You could say to the rabbi, this is very challenging for me, is there room to be lenient? You can say that. You can express where you're holding. No, you can't just not ask, it doesn't make it not a din. It's not like if you didn't know about it, then it doesn't apply to you. Maybe it's like that in school sometimes. Oh, I didn't know there was a test. Oh, you didn't know? Okay, you're exempt. Maybe you get away with it in school, right? But you don't get away with it in halacha. I didn't know this is halacha. Once you do know that there is a halacha question that you need to ask, you can't not ask. Gisha zu astala knafayim. Afilu b'nei Torah itraglu litchamek mishaylot. Unfortunately, this has even entered the Torah world. There are sometimes people who are Torah Jews, and there are certain questions they prefer not asking their rabbi because they're scared to hear what the answer would be, and they're worried that they wouldn't be able to, or they don't want to live up to. And then they think, maybe the answer is not really true. Chazal say about such a thing, Yodea lenagen shiyodea lishol. Someone knows how to play a musical instrument, is someone knows how to ask. Sheila tzricha letatzel kenegina. A question should be like music to your ears, and not like a bang of a hanger. I mean, when you ask a question, you should ask it in a pleasant way, in an open way, and not with an alternative. Rabbi, is this the answer? An interesting story I once heard. There was a great rabbi in Yerushalayim in the last generation. He wrote a commentary. Chazon Yecheskel, Yecheskel Abramsky. Okay, so he wrote the commentary on Tosefta. So Yecheskel Abramsky. And someone wanted to ask him a question and came out and said, Abramsky Paskin, this and this. And other people couldn't believe that he Paskin that, because they knew that he didn't agree with that particular psyche, but this person just came out saying. And so they went back into Abramsky, the other person went in, someone who was close to him, and said, did the Rav paskin for that person such and such? And Aronofsky said, no. Said, but he just said that you said that. He said, I didn't say that. He didn't ask him. He came in and he said, this is what we must do. So I said, okay. He didn't ask my opinion, and he didn't ask for a psak. He just said, the person asking the question just came in and said, this is what we must do. I said, okay. If you feel that's what we must do, that's what you feel. Very good. Like, what do you want from me? Good. And he walked out. So you didn't ask the question. You gave it wasn't even ultimatum. It was just you made a declaration. You made a declaration. What do you want from Rabbi Aronofsky? You didn't. Maybe he should have stood up and said, I disagree. He just said, you're not asking, I'm not answering. So it shouldn't be like a patish. Like, I'm making a declaration. Rabbi, I remember once, here in Karim Yavne, many years ago, there was a movement to give away the Golan. Ha'amim HaGolan at the time. And there were big rallies going on. It was like the first couple of years I was in yeshiva, 20 years ago, 21 years ago. And I remember there was a question of whether when there was a rally taking place, the yeshiva should shut down and take buses and everyone go to the rally, and that's a better thing to do, or learn Torah, and the merit of the Torah learning will... And there was a debate amongst different faculty members about what the better thing to do was. Eventually, the Rosh Yeshiva paskened that we'll open a yeshiva there. And this is what we did. The whole yeshiva went, and each shir was with their Rebbe, right? And went off to a place which relatively you could hear what was going on. I'm sure Freeman sat with his Bochrim and he gave shir there. And every Rebbe sat with a Talmidim, and there was not a stira. You can go and you can learn Torah. It doesn't have to be that you're going there, you're just mingling around. You can go and learn Torah. That's what eventually we did. Either way, I remember one person, an Avreich in the yeshiva, who was very dominant and proactive. So when he was like asking a question, but not really asking, he was like saying, Ze chayav ze, chayav ze ze. And then he said, Nachon Rav maskim iti. And the Rav wasn't really being asked. The Rav was just like being told, this is my opinion, and of course you agree with me, right? And the Rav like could maybe try and like argue that, but like, it wasn't really being asked. I want to know what the Torah opinion is on this matter. It was like, I have an agenda, I have my opinion, and of course everyone agrees with me, so what are we waiting for? So it depends how you do it. If you do it like a patish, you do it like a question. So basic emunah that a person has to be expressed throughout. Basic emunah in friends, basic emunah in Talmid HaChamim, and the basic emunah there will be able to be natural emunah in a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Okay, we've got to one of the most enlightening chapters. How do we work on our emunah? Now, I'm going to say ahead of time that this chapter is going to be a key, but it's not necessarily going to detail it enough to make it practical. You have to take the idea that's written here and work it. Meaning, just knowing this information won't help you so much. This chapter is more telling you of a process that you can do in your inner world, which if you do it, you can gain tremendously from having done it. If you don't do it, it will just be a waste of a couple of musa sayings. Because you'll know that there's a way of connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu more deeply out there, but I'm thinking, no, we're not doing it now. We're just learning about it. So just know what's happening, and then I'm you know, giving a shout out I'll give guidelines on how to do it. But this is something which everyone has to do themselves. It's not something maybe you could do it as a group, but we're not doing it as a group. We're just teaching the concept how to do it. But so know what this is, and then I'm encouraging everyone doing this themselves. We already said that the key to emunah is using one's imagination, using imagery. And we spoke before, a couple of sessions ago, about how you always have imagination, you always have imagery. It's just the question of which way it's channeled. The Eitz HaHara knows very well that imagination is what connects you deeply emotionally to something, and therefore he uses the power of imagination, and so does the media know this, and all the bad people out there, they know this, and therefore they will use the power of imagination to connect people to certain concepts, whether it's good or not good for them, because they know that's what deeply connects a person. And that's why, you know, Disney movies are so enjoyable, because you enter a whole new world, and you're like, there's a world of fantasy and imagination, and as long as all the messages there are basically neutral or parallel to neutral, then why not, you know? You develop a sense of imagination, develop, and that's why children love hearing stories when they're young, because they deeply enter a new world. And in a sense, by using imagination, you recognize that you can go beyond yourself. Let me show you what the Devar Torah. This is from the Kaf HaChaim. The Kaf HaChaim writes, what are the four brachos that we make in Havdalah? We make Hagafen, and then Besamim, and then Ner, and then Havdalah. What is the reason for those four and those in that order? He said the first is wine, because wine is your ability to taste only in the mouth. Then comes smell, because smell takes you even beyond. You can go even further. You can smell something not only what's in your nose, you can smell something even if it's a few hundred miles away, a few hundred meters away. Your vision, right, the Ner, you could see another planet in certain conditions. You can see the sun, you can see the moon. There you can see way beyond. But Das is even beyond that. Your ability to use your imagination is even beyond what you can see. You're able to have a Havdalah, an understanding of knowledge, of able to watch this and what's that, and have a differentiate between things, have an understanding that takes you beyond your sense of self entirely. That's what the purpose of the process of the Havdalah is. It's teaching you that you're able to take the spirituality of Shabbos, and as you go into the week, you're able to go beyond the limited physical sense of the things that you see. So what is beauty? What is the beauty of imagination? It's that you're not limited to what you experience. Straight out. You're able to develop in your imagination experiences which are true and beneficial way beyond what's naturally presented to you. And if you choose to use your imagination towards Kedusha, towards holy matters, then you can go way beyond your current state and connect the Kodesh Baruch on a much deeper level than you otherwise would. And therefore the main tool of Emunah is the imagination. Because HaKadosh Baruch was something which is not tangible, physical in front of me. Have you seen a table? I've seen a table. There's a table. I know what a table is. It's very clear. Where is the HaKadosh Baruch? Where is he? Up, up, down, down, left, right, right. Where is he? What does he look like? An old man with a beard. What am I looking for here? Only when you start developing the Koach HaTziur, your imagination, you're able to think in an abstract manner, in a broad manner, way beyond yourself. I remember when I was talking to one of my kids once, who was young, 4 or 5 years old, about Olam Haba. My grandmother was with us, may she live in Gua Chana Chaya Bas Bela. So she was saying, Tzvi, don't you think that the kids are a little young to discuss these ideas? These are deep ideas which are like for more mature minds. I said, this is the perfect age. I mean, obviously on the level, right? But they're at, but this is the age where their minds are so fertile and they're full of imagination. They're looking for stories. They're looking, their imagination is without bounds. You know, they don't know what limitations are. They don't know that only certain things make sense and you have to think in some ready-made, boxed-in ways. Like, everything could be normal. I remember once when I was younger, I was reading a philosophical book. And in the book, they gave a mashal, which I thought was a brilliant mashal. They said a mashal of, there's a husband and a wife and a baby sitting at a table. And the baby is given pasta. And the baby says, woo! All excited about the pasta. Amazing, look, pasta, so exciting. And the mother and the father, they're like, pasta. Okay, you have pasta, that's a normal thing. And then, in the next scene, the father starts floating towards the ceiling. Floating. Towards the ceiling, the father is floating. And the baby says, oh, and the mother, like, didn't notice at the beginning. And she turns around and says, oh, and she faints. Like, what just happened in that story? What just happened? But to the child, getting pasta is as novel as the father floating. But to the mother, no, pasta's normal. And the father floating is not normal. That's not within my world. And they give you faith. So a young child, their mind is fertile because there's no rules. They're not blocked in. Our minds, as we've developed, we've become blocked in our way of thinking. We've become limited in our way of thinking. And it's unique people who are able to think out of the box. But for a child, that's the natural way. There's no box that they were squashed into. They have to think according to a certain way. So in a sense, the children are most into imagination because that's their world. Even the real world for them is like imagination because who knows what's going to happen next? Because everything is just new. And so when you're able to tap into that world, you're tapping into a world which is beyond limitation. And that's where you can connect to Hashem. Because if you're thinking in a box-thin world, then you'll only be able to see what's in your box. But once you recognize that you can think outside of the box, you don't have to be limited by this particular box that was created by the society that you live in, then you'll be able to think abstractly and connect to this world. So the way, the mafteach emunah, the key to faith, to emunah, is developing imagination. And it's unfortunate that we think of imagination as childish. It's true that it's primary by children because they have not been boxed in yet. But that's not a b'di'evet. That's a lachatchila. This is what I'm saying. This is important. We see it as if you're still into imagination, then you're immature or you're childish. You're into imagination. It's all in your imagination, people say. As if it's a bad thing. Right? It's all your imagination. You have to be real, you have to be rational, you have to be in the real world. Right? If you have imagination, you're still immature, they people say. But what are we saying here? We're saying no. It's true that it's developed well by a child. But if you wish to remain against the Kadosh Baruch Hu, then your koach hatziur has to remain as strong and to be developed. In a child, it's random. Who knows what they're going to be thinking or imagining? It's according to what their maturity level is. But as you mature, you should be able to develop your imagination as well. And take your imagination a step higher. There are certain images that a person can awaken and strengthen their relationship with Hashem. Strengthen their emunah. And they become the base of the way that we think. And this is what the Rambam says. The Rambam is the one who says that the emunah is the tziur ha'amiti v'hanachon. Everyone's always imagining everything. Let me try and put it clearly. Everyone processes the world through a filter. So if I believe that people are basically good, then whenever I relate to anyone, I'll interpret their words as basically being good. And if I believe that everyone out there is crooked and mean and ulterior motives, and then when I hear their words, I'll filter it through, what are they trying to do, what are they trying to get to me? No one sees the world the same as someone else. Everyone has a filter that they've developed through their experiences they've had so far in the world. And any information that they process at all times is always being filtered. In fact, the only reason we're able to talk is because everyone here in this room, we share a lot of common filters. And therefore, when I'm saying certain words, you know what I'm saying. And maybe there'll be some phrases that I say that will understand different ways. Let me give you an example of that. When I first got married, my wife said a phrase that frustrated me. And I didn't say anything about it. And then after a few times, I said something, and she was shocked that I'd interpreted it that way. Because she meant it in a pure, good way, but in my filter, I filtered it wrong. I filtered it not according to her intention. She said the phrase, when I did something good, she said, good for you. Now, her intention was, well done! Shkoyach! That's what she meant. Right? But like for example, if I would come home and say, like, I was able to learn a 4-hour Seder today. Like, and I was all proud of myself, and I wanted to get good feedback. So I would say, I learned a 4-hour Seder. And she would say, good for you. And I meant, and I interpreted it as, why weren't you home? You only care about yourself. There you are in yeshiva the whole day, and why don't you come home and help me with the kids? Good for you that you did that. Well done. You're doing good things that help you out. But what about me? That's how I misunderstood it. That was my wrong filter that I was using. And she didn't mean that at all. She meant, good for you. Well done. She didn't do the hand, right? So it was hard to interpret without the hand. It would have been good for you. It would have been easier. She just said good for you. So sometimes our filters clash. And because our filters are clashing, then we misunderstand each other. That's why it's always important when you are upset with something that someone said, you check in with it. What did you mean by that? Did you mean this and this? And you say it in your own words? And they say, no, not at all. If it's someone who like you think means to do good with you, and it's like out of context, they would say a bad thing. It's likely that you're hearing through a filter, which is not what they mean to say at all. So everyone always has a filter that they're going through the world with. And they're relating to everything in the world through a particular filter. There's a true filter. There's only one true filter, and that's emunah. And that's recognizing the world through Hashem's lens. And as a person develops their emunah, their filter becomes more and more God's orientation. Recognizing everything through the way God would see something. And as you learn more Navi, and as you learn more Gemara, and as you learn more Hashkafa, emunah, these svarim, and you get an understanding of God's view of the world, the God according to God, you know? Not God according to some philosopher, but God according to God. Through his scriptures, where he told you, right? Then your vision, your filter is godly. And that's an emunah world. That's what emunah is. Emunah is developing a perception from God's perspective. And when you look at the world where everything is Hashkacha Pratis, and everything is Yad Hashem, and everything that ever happens is This is God doing it for a particular reason, and you're able, through the knowledge of history, through learning Tanakh, through understanding God's ways of viewing things, you're able to see this kind of thing God would do for this particular reason, and you understand according to His way. Like in the example I just gave with my wife, like if I would have known that the way my wife means the phrase good for you is a compliment, right? Then when she would say it, I would say it means a compliment. Because I've tapped into her way of thinking. So my way of thinking initially was it was an insult. But then as I developed my emunah, or I developed my, you know, aligning myself with my wife, then I understood that no, it actually means it's a compliment. And so too with Hashem. You see lots of events taking place in the world. And initially you view them through a filter of, I don't know what, through your parents, through the Western society, through movies or sitcoms or comics that you've seen. I don't know how we're viewing our world, but it's through our life experience we've had until now. And we interpret all these things in these ways. And then you pause and you say, one second, just like I paused and said, what did my wife mean when she said that? And I was able to change the vision and see it from her perspective. We then refine our filter and we see it from God's perspective. And that's emun. That's what emun is. But you have to be able to think in an abstract manner to do that. You have to have learned a lot of Torah, learned Hashkafa, and then think, how would God apply everything I've learned in God, what I've understood of God so far, how would I apply what I understand of God to this situation? You have to think abstract to do that. To use your imagination to do that. And when you, as you develop your imagination, and you're developing your imagination in accordance to God's way of thinking, you develop the emunah perspective. And that's the beautiful words of the Rambam. The Rambam's words. Emunah hi hatziur hanachon v'hamiti. What is emunah? Emunah is when your filter, your vision, your picture, your tziur is the true one. The godly one. And then you're seeing it for what it really is. Isn't that amazing? It's an amazing thing. If a painter would paint a painting, and he has a particular principle in mind when he's painting, someone else could come along and they could say, I read it, I gave this example before, but I want to give it again now actually. I'll just finish that one. And they say, I read into it that there was a theme or a message of da-da-da. Right? They say, well, you're telling me a lot about yourself, but that's not what the painter had in mind. But if you want to know what the painter had in mind, then you ask the painter. And the painter will tell you, I had this in mind. And you say, yes, of course, that's what it's, you see that all along. I told this already, but my father-in-law, when they were the Hespedim, so everyone who gave him a Hesped that we knew about, whoever did, was people who knew him well and reflected his worldview. And therefore they were able to give an impression of who he was according to who he really was. But in Cape Town, there's a Reform Shul. And the Reform Shul also put out a Hesped or a statement about my father-in-law. And they said, as if he was very supportive of their Hashkafa. He was the only rabbi who was tolerant of the Reform views. He always saw eye to eye with us on different issues. Now, I know my father-in-law to some level, and I know that he was very respectful and very polite. And I imagine, and I also know that he had very strong Orthodox views. And he was very anti-reform. But he was very respectful and very polite. And I see how someone could, using their filter, interpret, well, he was polite to me, so he agreed with my philosophy. I could see how someone would filter that way. They didn't ask him, do you agree with us? They just filtered it their way, because they want to, because that's their worldview. And therefore they will reinterpret what he meant. And he would say, I never said that in my life. You put the comma in the wrong place. You put it before the word not. And therefore the word not changes the whole sentence. But you put the comma or the full stop before the word not, and then it makes it as if it's a positive one. So it depends what the filter you're using is. You are obligated to get into the filter of the one who said the statement. What did you mean? In the case of my wife, what did you mean when you said good for you? What did you mean? I don't care what I think it means. I care what you meant, because you're the one saying it. Our obligation is, it's God's world. He made the world. We're not allowed to go and say, well, I think God made this and this and this. No, ask God. Don't you start coming and imprinting your false impressions on what God's world is. Get into His mindset, learn His Torah, and then ask Him what He meant when He did it. And then you'll have an authentic view. That's emunah. The tzior ha-nachon v'amiti. God according to God. Okay, so we've begun a process, but that was a very clear and crucial point. As we continue, we're going to develop more on how to develop a hashkafa of emunah through tzior.